This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 122 for February 28th, 2008. Welcome, everybody. I'm Dan Stapleton, and allow me to introduce my cohorts, our editor-in-chief, Kristen Salvatore.
Hi there.
Our senior executive editor, Chuck Osborne.
Happy birthday!
To who?
To nobody in particular, but that's how Frosty came to life, you know, and Frosty the Snowman.
And it's bound to be somebody's birthday out there. So
Yeah, someone. Happy birthday to you, whoever you are.
Would you say maybe 1/365th of the world's population?
Exactly.
Was that in one of those Christmas, you know, specials where they were the sort of animated puppets?
Yeah, Frosty the Snowman, you know, the old...
There was a Rudolph one,
No, it wasn't Rankin Bass. In this one, these were animated, actually.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, I went to
Sorry.
Anyway, we've got Norm Chan, our Killing Box columnist.
Pleasure to be a cohort.
And our producer, Andy Bauman.
I'm here, eating sandwiches.
That is multitasking.
Sandwiches.
Andy's in our podcast.
He's eating these sandwiches.
That's right.
These sandwiches. Mm.
Your sandwiches.
What
Listen,
type of sandwiches?
Andy, if you can't bring sandwiches for everyone.
I tried to send him over the tubes, but they didn't fit.
I just need to point out that Andy is both producing and consuming at the same time.
Whoa.
So. That was he's deep. A prosumer.
That was so deep.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, the big news for gamers everywhere this week is that EA has apparently mistaken Take-Two for a price tag and offered $2 billion to buy the company. It didn't work out exactly how EA would have liked it. The Take-Two board has turned them down.
How does that exactly work? Did EA just walk into the room, you know, with a briefcase?
Yeah, they go, hey, it looks like open. You got a nice company here. We might want to buy it from you for $2 billion.
I just like the idea that this is the way of the world in the gaming business from now. And, like, I think we should all just start offering to buy, like, you know what? Let me check my wallet here. I think I got, like, $7-$8. I'd like to buy, Logan Decker. I'm going to buy Logan Decker.
I think you're
but Logan Decker is not publicly traded, though. As far as I know.
Good point.
I'm not going to touch that one, but I the way they're allowed to do this is that Take-Two and 2K is their publishing label or one of their labels. They are a publicly traded company, so they are basically going to the shareholders and saying we want to buy this company. Actually, first they went to the board, and now that the board has turned them down, they're going to the shareholders. Because EA just doesn't let you say no to them. It's like saying no to the Borg. It's like, no, we don't want to be assimilated. Well, we have something else to say about that. So there's been a lot of back and forth there. EA had made specific reference, and a lot of the stuff got posted online in order to communicate to the shareholders, you know, what was going on, because EA wants the shareholders to see that their board is turning down this great offer.
Come on, you guys!
Yeah. It's money. Free money.
Yeah, so EA made specific reference to GTA 4 in their offer. So 2K came back and said, well, you know, we don't think it would be a good idea to do this until GTA 4 comes out. You know, which they felt would let them, be in a stronger position to negotiate a price.
Basically, they said $2 billion is not nearly enough.
Right,
pocket change. Although it is like a 60% premium on their stock price.
But then their stock went up just like a day later.
Yeah, their stock like doubled the next day.
Well, that's what happens when there's a takeover. You know, rumor is, you know, people think a company's going to merge. They want in on that. So it doesn't have a whole lot to do with anything but the merger talk.
Not me. I'm really keeping my money in my mattress where it's safe.
I mean, do you think EA wants Take-Two for GTA 4 or isn't obvious
just,
that they want.
Are they just mad about the Activision Blizzard? You know, they were like, screw well,
they
those
want,
guys.
They want
like,
names.
We can buy companies too.
Right. Well, there are a couple of different things I've been reading online from various analysts. One guy or several people are saying that EA really just wants the 2K Sports franchise to just consolidate their hold on sports games. And GTA is you know it's significant, but next to that, it's not that big a deal.
I'm not as educated about this as I should be in primary part because there aren't that many sports games, you know, on the PC. But is the widely held theory that Take-Two is actually giving EA a run for its money in the sports category?
They're sort of the only two
games in town, but
yeah, they have some good franchises, but I mean, you know, EA they still have the major players. I mean, they've got the really big name franchises.
Right,
and
got,
the licenses,
NFL
don't they?
And stuff. Yeah, they've got NFL Lockdown. I think they've got Baseball Lockdown as well.
Yeah.
But 2K has a couple of licenses, I think. I don't.
Well, they just
for like curling and yeah.
What was that, Chuck?
Sorry. They just released their new baseball game today, I think.
Right, but I don't know if they have the official Major League Baseball license. Do they?
Oh, is this the show?
Yes, they do indeed. Major League Baseball 2008. It didn't just come out today. I'm sorry, it went gold today for just about every platform except for the PC. So.
I'm happy playing High Heat Baseball 2004 on the PC.
Right. I forget.
I'm happy pitchers and catchers have reported.
I like to bunt.
But I mean, all that is kind of irrelevant to PC gamers. I mean, what we care more about is the BioShocks and what else does 2K have? I'm blanking on it. They've got Civilization. They've got help me out.
Border. What upcoming? They've got Borderlands and
right.
Or
Mafia just
2
freelancer. I'm talking about intellectual properties in general, like the series that we all know and love that 2K has. You know, Civilization and BioShock are both huge
Bully?
For me.
Well, they also have a connection to you know Duke Nukem Forever.
Right.
True. That's true.
And the GTA franchise, of course, and
I mean, I think you know the thing is like if you consider, I think the like Rockstar is really considered to be like the you know the flagship arm of that company, and we always feel like we get sort of sloppy seconds from them. So I think that's why we're all sort of here, sitting here going like hemming and hawing over like well, I don't know like like I think you've named most of the stuff that we're really interested in from the company,
right? And they have a few other things that you know are. 2K puts out quite a few games, so
yeah, the Jade Empire games and
right, yeah, they've put out several games that we were very interested.
You know, Elder Scrolls.
Yeah, yeah.
There's that.
there is Oblivion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ghost Rider.
Ghost
Rider. Well,
hey now. In that case,
didn't come out for PC either, unfortunately.
Yeah, they don't actually own the Elder Scrolls IP. Bethesda owns that. No. So
that's true.
Dan, you know what would be interesting about this is that EA holds the rights to System Shock.
Right, right.
Yes.
So if they get back together with Irrational, 2K Boston now, that
would
be
cool. They don't even need to do that. I mean, they can just, you know, put any development team on it they want to. So and you know, now that 2K Boston has you know, the BioShock IP, which is much more valuable at this point than System Shock, there's really no incentive for them to want that IP back.
I should add that we have essentially in this goofy little conversation named all of the PC games that they publish. Unless you count like unless you count like Viet Cong 2.
Okay, good.
Like
I was worried we weren't thorough.
No, we were right on.
Yeah. Unless they decide to do another Max Payne, I guess. There's that.
So if EA were to take them over, it's not all that clear how that would really affect us. I mean, especially EA has been showing signs of being a little bit better lately than they have been in the past for, you know, with quality concerns, you know, and not like, you know, buying up a franchise and then just, you know, running into the ground. Like the Battlefield series is a good example. They've treated that pretty well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Battlefield, Crysis, you know, the Lord of the Rings games, they've all been, you know, fairly high quality games. I'm actually more concerned, and you know, this is a minor consideration for the PC, obviously, but you know, EA's PC sports games have just been awful, and I know that you know, 2K, you know, they don't really have any sports games for the PC in the first place, but you know. It would be nice if they could give the PC some better games for the sports fans.
And getting back to the sports thing, I do hear you know, I don't play any of them myself, but the reputation I've heard from the various companies is that EA has the, you know, the lion's share of the market, but you know, with like Madden and things like that, but 2K gets more credit for being innovative in the genre and actually doing new things instead of just turning out new games with new, you know, updated player stats and things like that. So it would be bad for sports games in general, just because you know, it reduces competition.
And well, I think you can make the case that it's bad for games in general because it reduces competition. Right. You know, like, I mean, obviously this has been the trend in all major media for years now. It's happened in book publishing. You know, it already happened in book publishing where where once there were tons of major publishers, now most of them are imprints of, you know, three or four large publishers who themselves are, you know, are just parts of other large conglomerates. I think anytime, you know, particularly in entertainment media, that there's continued amalgamation of all the companies, that's not necessarily a good thing for any of us. So
right, and it does give them more resources. Like when I was talking to BioWare at VDC, they were saying that they do have more resources to work with now. But I don't think, I mean, they made some awesome games without all those resources. So I don't know how much of a benefit that's going to be to.
I wonder what kind of resources they're referring to. Like we've all been down to the EA campus in Redwood City, yeah. Like. Better salads in the, you know.
Well, no, I think they're talking about money. They're talking about art assets. Right. You know, just sharing between the art teams is actually incredibly valuable for.
And is that?
For the
but do we know that that's happening? Like, I was under the impression that, in fact, the various EA properties quite compete with one another. I wasn't under the impression that they do share those resources.
What they told me is that they do share resources. They share technology. They share personnel.
It's distribution channels too.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's getting the marketing stuff, getting into stores. EA is they're a pretty big powerhouse when it comes to that.
Right. So, and you know, and like Kristen said earlier, they are probably trying to compete, or trying to get back on top, being the number one biggest publisher again. Now that Activision Blizzard has one upped them, so that's probably a concern for them too as well.
All this talk makes me wish there was a game publishing tycoon game.
you know, I'm betting somewhere out there there probably is one.
Yeah, considering they've got, you know,
in fact, I think there is one actually.
Really?
I you know, I would not bet against it.
Yeah,
but probably something from Activision Value.
So yeah, we're just gonna have to wait and see how that turns out. I've seen some analysts predicting that EA will eventually get its way, just because that's how these things usually end up, and it's apparently very difficult.
It's big and whiny.
Right. It's very difficult to resist these kind of things, apparently. So, like for 2K to hold out against
big bags of money,
right?
Big bags of money are hard to turn down.
Yeah. Okay, so
to hold out against an offer that would make their shareholders money is very difficult for them to do.
Sure.
So real quick, thanks to the internet, yes, Game Tycoon came out in 2006, courtesy of TriSynergy. So if you would like to reenact this for yourself, the software is out there for you.
I know what I'm doing this weekend.
Okay, so a little bit of I guess that wasn't really an uplifting story, but on a further downer, There was a death in the PC gaming family today. Ironlore, who developed the Titan Quest RPG, and more recently the Warhammer 40K Dawn of War Soulstorm standalone expansion to Relics Dawn of War series, They just announced that due to a series of unfortunate, unrelated, and undisclosed events, they've been unable to secure funding for the next project and have had to shut down the company. It's always terrible to lose a good development house. I mean, they put out some pretty solid games.
Now, that's probably a company that would have been jumping for joy if EA had come by and said, you know, hey, we'll buy you for you know, an undisclosed sum.
Sure.
Yeah, it does kind of surprise me that you know, any developers really, or with any, you know, credibility or any street cred for having put out some decent games, that any developer would actually shut down instead of, you know, EA coming in and buying them up, or EA or something else.
What did they say? They were unrelated, undisclosed, and what was the other one?
unconnected.
It sounds like things went awry at the company Christmas party or something. Like.
No, they were unclothed.
Yes.
not unclothed. No, and from the post on their website, it sounds like they just had a little run of bad luck in securing financing for the next game, and they're on a model where they're just kind of going project to project, and if they couldn't get money from a publisher to put out their next game, then they've got no company.
See what I'm saying? Keep your money in your mattress, people.
Oh,
right. And you know, not all developers have had enough success that they can self-finance their own project until, you know, they get it to a point where a developer will pick it up. Or a publisher will pick it up. So,
God, I'd be real curious at this point. I don't know the answer to this, but I think we should look into it and find out. I'd be extremely curious to find out what a developer the size of Iron Lore, like, how much money do you have to make off of a project in order to cover your expenses and fund yourself for the next go-round? You know what I mean? Like, how much money do you really have to be making in order to keep your doors open? Because I suspect it's a lot more than we think it is.
Yeah, and game development is now, you know, a double-digit million-dollar proposition. So,
it is. But then on the opposite end, you know, all of GDC. I don't know if you guys talked about this on the podcast last week, but a huge part of GDC had to do with all of, you know, further announcements about the XNA initiative. So at the same time that it's this gazillion, you know, on one end of the spectrum, it costs a gazillion dollars to keep things going. On the other end of the spectrum, there's this whole sort of nascent community of people who are doing it really on the cheap.
Right, but those are generally kind of a different level of. You know, production quality. I mean, there are definitely a lot of fun games that come out of that. You know, games with a lot of innovation and a lot of creative ideas in them. But like a game on the scale of Titan Quest or something like that, that takes a lot more people.
It does, but I'm gonna throw out the possibility that in fact there are a bunch of those smaller XNA based or like Torque Engine based whatever games that some of us here have played that I bet we enjoyed more than Titan Quest.
I haven't actually played Titan Quest, so I'm not a fair judge of that.
And there you go.
Well, yeah.
You see
what you did? But to be fair, I don't think Dan plays any of the XNA games either. So,
Dan killed Iron Lore. Did you hear that?
I played Soulstorm.
Dan didn't
play
Titan Quest.
I played Soulstorm.
Yeah, he did. In fact, the review's going to be in our May issue. So, and Dan, we were talking about earlier, how is that going to affect any future patches for Soulstorm?
Apparently, it was always in the agreement for Relic to do the follow-up support for Soulstorm. So Iron Lore closing isn't really going to affect Soulstorm in its post-release. So you don't have to worry if there are bugs in the final game, then, you know, Relic will presumably support it.
One final thing before we leave this story is that they're trying to facilitate, you know, people getting hired away from Iron Lore. You know, it's ruined. So if you are a developer out there or a publisher who is in need of some development folk, go to their website and they have some information on how to recruit their ex-employees.
Yeah, and they're in the Boston area.
Speaking of death, so apparently, according to a study in Helsinki, Finland, the Finns are always coming up with these kind of wacky studies, and I'd like to thank them for it. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank them for it. Apparently, gamers dislike killing, but they like dying. So apparently, gamers in this test group were, and I quote, angered and anxious after shooting their enemies, while their own deaths elicited a response of joy.
What?
Huh? What? This is on Czech News today.
wait, their own deaths?
Their own deaths. Yeah. Their own deaths, yes.
Yay, well, I'm dead.
I'm dead.
I mean, their sample size is 36.
Yeah, it was a small sample, but
they were playing James Bond Nightfire, which from what I understand was not a great game.
Oh, well that,
so maybe,
yeah, that explains a
they were
lot
happy
because
the game was over when they died.
Right, exactly. I had to review that game, and yeah, when I died, yeah,
you
that was a happy experience.
Death,
yeah. If it meant I didn't have to play anymore, then that was a good thing, yeah.
Now, I have to wonder, though, is there like, their measurement of these, like, anxiety and joy and things like that, could they be kind of, like, a little bit off as to what they're feeling? Maybe when people are fighting, they are feeling anxious, like, that, you know, they are in the, you know, in the heat of battle, and, you know, that does get you a little bit anxious, but I don't think it makes you angry or sad or something, or it means you don't like it.
It doesn't. I'm actually looking more closely to see if there were any specific like physical measurements, and it doesn't say. But I could see, you know, maybe yeah. Is it? Are you saying is it possible they misinterpreted the physical reaction to these things as being one thing,
right,
when really they were another? I suppose that's
right.
Possible.
And you know what? When you say somebody's happy when they died, maybe they just relax a little bit when there's a little bit of downtime between rounds.
That does actually say that in this article. It's entirely possible that the brief relief, you know, from combat actually explains the positive response. That you get a brief respite, unless you're playing Team Fortress 2 against us.
And,
in which case,
yeah,
you just keep dying!
And again, I wouldn't discount the fact that this is a terrible game. Really. I mean, if it was a better game, then, you know, maybe people wouldn't be quite so happy to die.
But I think this more than anything just goes to show that most of these studies are pretty meaningless. I mean, there are so many ways to interpret the data that the conclusions that you draw are going to be pretty subjective to, you know, whatever.
Maybe we should... Sorry, yeah, no, you're right. I was going to say, sorry, I started to think out loud, and I was going to say maybe we should call the guys at PC Gamer UK and ask them how they felt. Like, were they happy when we killed them? Like, how did they feel?
Aww.
Well, see, I mean, on the surface of the story, I thought what they were talking about was that, you know, accepting death in a game is fine, but the act of actually killing someone
right.
upset you. And so I was kind of thinking about it in terms of the meat industry. Like, you know, I eat meat, but if I had to kill my own food, I think I would turn vegetarian.
Right.
Just because I wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah. True enough.
But no, it's not that. It's something very simple. So never mind.
Those wacky fins.
Yeah. And the angle that a lot of the people are taking with this story is that this shows that games don't desensitize people to violence, which, you know, I think is jumping to conclusions as much as saying that they do, because I don't think this data proves anything really. So
basically, Finland, you're wasting your money.
Well, I mean, it is nice that they show how, you know, how useless all the other studies are at the same time. So maybe, you know, there's some value in that as well. So things that don't have as much value in them as they were supposed to would include certain copies of The Club from Sega for the PC. Apparently, some of these games shipped out without the Windows Live for Windows month trial code that you're supposed to get to get full access to multiplayer features. So Sega does have a website set up to get people fixed up. If you have to tell them like where and when you bought the game, and they can trace, you know, where the bad copies went, so they have some idea that you're not trying to scam them.
Yet another high point for the Live for Windows initiative.
Yeah, you could argue that you're better off without that trial code. You'll save yourself the agony of Live for Windows. But I guess my copy that I just got in has my Live for Windows trial code.
And just out of curiosity, where do they put it? Is it just like a loose piece of paper in there?
Yeah, it's this extra card. It's not a piece of paper. It's a piece of, you know.
It's like like handwritten in pencil on like a piece of notebook paper. They just like tore it off and stuck it in the box.
Well, I have to say that with PC games, one of my pet peeves is printing the registration code on the back of the manual. It's like the one thing that you're most likely to lose. Hey, let's put something very valuable on the back of it. Not only is it difficult to find, but it's on, you know,
Where would you rather have it be then?
He wants it on the disc.
I want it either on the disc or I want it on the case behind the disc.
The disc is inside the drive when you're installing.
Well, but you write it down. You're not going to lose it, is the point.
Yeah. I mean, like, personally, what I do with my games usually is I take a Sharpie and write the code on the disc. So
use a Sharpie.
Well, not necessarily a Sharpie, but okay. a marker that can write on the disc. And a Sharpie is fine for most things, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't destroy a...
It will... I was under the impression that we'll actually start to wear down the disc. Like, it will actually... over time, it can cause damage to a disc.
I think that might be just for discs that you burn yourself. I don't think it might... and especially discs that have...
Well, I guess if there's a label, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So I'm always writing on the label anyway, so...
I take it back. Sharpie people, you're doing a fine job.
So you're saying I shouldn't use an ice pick, then?
Yeah.
I've been using that.
After you've taken your disc out of the microwave.
You should not carve your serial code into the disc.
I think serial keys are, it's an archaic form of copy protection. I think we're going to move on to that. I mean, the internet models, where you don't need the code, but you just register with something like Steam.
Well, at least it's not as bad as, like, back in the old days when I used to play Infocom Adventure games, and they would, like, have you turn to page 75 and type in word number 5 or something.
But I do want to give just yesterday, I want to say, or the day before, we received an email from a PC gamer, longtime PC gamer reader, who does not have broadband. He happens to live someplace rural where it's not available, and he's still on dial-up. So I just want to give a shout-out to the people, like... You know, there are still some out there, and some of them are reading PC Gamer, for whom would be an option.
But even with dial-up, if they could streamline the process a little bit, so you just have to dial in, have a brief interaction with the server to validate your game once. And that would be much better than most things. I mean, it's not ideal certainly, but it would be better than a lot of these things. But back to the codes in weird places though. There have been some games where I can't think of the game that it was right now, but there was some game that came in a multi-disc case. I just could not find the serial number for. Mm-hmm. It was hidden under like the third disc out of four in the case. It was the most ridiculous thing I had ever seen. I was convinced that they just hadn't given me one.
My other pet peeve about that is when they use the large block letters, and so they'll print B and it looks like an 8.
Yes, 8s look like, or zeros look like O's, capital O's.
Yes.
Man, those guys suck.
Yeah. You guys.
Jeez.
With your big blocky printing font.
Damn.
I would rather answer some trivia question about, Indianapolis 500 or something when I remember playing that game and having to flip through the manual.
It's like a mini game then.
It is
when you're installing.
So now you can also purchase the club through Steam, right?
Yeah.
So how does that work with does anyone know how it works with Windows Live? I mean, is Windows Live just automatically included?
I'm guessing that's how it works. That they probably download the whole thing and then use Live for Windows as the multiplayer server service instead of Steam,
which is really stupid because. Lame. Wasn't the point of Games for Windows Live that you wouldn't need a gold account? You wouldn't need an account that you had to pay for to play online games. You'd only need it for their special matchmaking service. And that silver accounts, free accounts that you can create anywhere, could still play multiplayer games.
Yeah, allegedly. I mean, I haven't actually tried it out myself yet, so I'm not sure. But I'm sure that is the way it's supposed to be. But like the box that I have has a sticker on the front saying free 1 month live gold trial inside. That's probably the issue, that you know that something is advertised on the box that was not in the box. So
quality.
Moving on.
What's in the box?
Have you played it yet? I haven't played it yet.
I haven't played it yet. I kid.
So yeah, we don't know we don't know the quality of what's in the box yet. The quality of the box contents is yet to be determined.
There's a decapitated head in the box.
He's wacky. He's a lawyer.
He's Jack Thompson. Jack Thompson.
So we avoid talking about him because we don't want to satisfy his apparent craving for attention. Because why else would he do the things that he does if he's not just desperate for attention?
Because he's crazy. Who said that?
I have no idea.
Jeez.
So
Looney Bin. Sorry, I'll go on, Dan.
Guys, I'll let you guys go for a while, and then I'll just pick this up.
No, Dan, we're done.
Okay, we know this is exciting, yes, for you. So
very important.
Go on.
So I've been following this one on GamePolitics.com, which does a great job of covering all of Jack's antics. This story, as I understand it, is that in order to protest the Florida Bar's attempts to have him disbarred and, you know, kicked out of the, you know, revoke his legal license, no more problems from him. he submitted this letter to the court, to the Florida High Court, Supreme Court, which is incredibly patronizing, incredibly disrespectful to the court, where he says, well, you know, you're just not understanding my arguments, so I'm going to dumb it down for you and make a picture book for adults, as he calls it, where he makes his case about how he's being treated unfairly, and it's a Word document where he has just copied and pasted pictures he seems to have culled from the internet. It's things like this. Here, then, is renewed attempt to communicate a problem that Thompson has not made clear, but which should now be so clear with this filing that even, and then he has a picture of Ray Charles, and then could see it. So, it goes on and on like that. I mean, it's.
But in particular, a member of the PC Gamer staff has taken particular umbrage. With one graphic.
This was very
in this document. That's really very upsetting.
There is a sentence here. It says, "So here we go again with the career crippling libelous news coverage ginned up by the bar." Blah blah blah. After libelous and before news coverage, he has a little cartoon of two squirrels, one of which is pointing a gun at the other.
Well, and basically, it's glorifying squirrel on squirrel violence, and
it's really upsetting.
Yeah, this has upset Logan Decker immensely. In fact, so much so he couldn't even participate in this podcast.
Yeah, it's really
he was incoherent.
It was really a grievous error on Thompson's part because, you know, you can screw with the Florida Bar, but I would not screw with Logan Decker on
or squirrels because they're vicious. They will come after you.
Yeah. So slightly less offensive than that is that he has some swastikas in here as well.
Swastikas. Who cares about that?
It's just over the top, completely disrespectful of the court. So what the court did in response was to say, please explain to us why we shouldn't just not accept anything you submit anymore and basically require you to go through another attorney, you know, to submit anything to the court. Because they're
really
sick. Yeah.
Why would you sit down a crazy person and say, please explain to us, crazy person, why you're not crazy?
I can't wait for his next crazier response.
Hey, loony guy, tell us more about why you're sane.
I mean, I really cannot express what a joy it is to have Jack Thompson as an opponent.
We would normally have to like discredit somebody, and do some research to figure out why this person shouldn't be listed.
He does it for us.
Right, it's like he actually went to the trouble of submitting this to court.
All right, that's the end of the Thompson minute. Making
that's the end of the Jack Thompson minute.
if that happens, which, you know, probably will, because this is ridiculous, it'll be a major handicap for him while he's trying to defend himself from being disbarred, which, you know, will expedite the end of any Jack Thompson minutes in the future, because, yeah. Nobody wants to hear about him anymore.
Hey, PC Gamer. I just listened to your February 22nd podcast, and I was wondering why you chose not to discuss more about GDC. Specifically, why you failed to mention the amazing video footage that came out about Age of Conan. Age of Conan has to be one of the most uniquely developing MMORPGs I have seen since the dawn of World of Warcraft and the various World of Warcraft clones that have came out since then. So what gives, PC Gamer? Give us your opinion and the full scoop about what you saw of Age of Conan. Thank you.
Is this IDOS PR?
I was just going to say the same thing.
Dude, it's all recorded, all pro. It's totally PR.
Some intern over at IDOS. Your job today is to send email all the podcasts.
Why are you ignoring this amazing game, Age of Conan?
Have you heard of Conan Barbarian?
Oh, boy.
It looks real nice. I didn't actually get a chance to see it at GDC. Did anybody get a chance to see it?
I don't think. I think we passed up seeing it at GDC because we're scheduled to see it very soon.
That's right.
And a lot more than anybody saw at GDC. So, and there are a lot of people at GDC that we wouldn't have gotten to see later. So we had to prioritize that. So I guess it's coming up very very soon that we'll have more to talk about with Conan, but we're not ignoring.
Definitely not.
I've been excited about Conan, since it was first announced, especially the whole single player element to it.
Me too.
I think it's really cool. So I am looking.
It's a little. Agreed. It's downsized. It's not a full fledged single player game anymore.
No, they took some of it out.
Yeah, it's. I think the first 20 levels of the game you'll be able to play either single player or multiplayer on this island.
That's right.
And
it's been that way.
That was always the plan.
But you can play it alone. Yeah, you can play it alone, and the combat's supposed to be really neat.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that game.
I saw it like 2 years ago at Leipzig, and the combat looked really neat then. So
they've changed
with
the
extend effects. It's just been getting better and better looking too.
So yeah, we'll have more to talk about that later.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Hey, what's up, PC Gamer Podcast? Long time reader and relatively new listener, Zero Cool. Calling in from Virginia. I had a question. I wanted to know what kind of games you guys play, that you keep coming back to. Like, I play a lot of different shooters and real-time strategies and other types of games, but I keep come back and keep playing Counter-Strike on a regular basis, Counter-Strike Source. So I was just wondering if there are any particular games you guys float back to every once in a while when you need some good old-fashioned gaming. Anyway, thanks. Bye.
Norm, I know you've got some of those.
I'm sorry, I missed half the question.
Wow. Welcome back, Norm.
Zoned out.
Just asking what kind of games, or what games do you have that are personally ones that you always come back to again and again? Just always are playing it, seems like.
I always go back to the Half-Life game.
You used to say Peggle?
I was going to say Peggle.
That's too new. We need more examples.
Once I finished all the challenges on Peggle, what's the point?
You know, one game I've always had installed, and every time I build a new system, and I just reinstall it, is Quake 3, because I know I can always jump on, find a couple people to play with, and pass half an hour of time.
That's actually my choice, too, is Quake 3, or even Quake 4, since, a lot of the same maps from, especially Q3.17 is back in Quake 4, so, either one of those.
I like to go back to, XCOM, obviously, sometimes any of the Civilization games. I did go back to Total Annihilation quite a few times before Supreme Commander came out, but now that's my... That's only been a year or so since I came out, so I can't really use that as an example. I don't really have a shooter I keep going back to, though. There's always something pretty new that I haven't played that I want to experience.
Would you say that probably Team Fortress 2 is like the new shooter that you would go back to?
I think so. I mean, it just for the fact that the art style is cartoony and is going to age amazingly well, I think. I think that one will be around for a long, long time.
Oh. I also have Counter-Strike installed, but I don't go back to that to play it because it's fun. I go back and play it just to remind me how much I hate it.
Wow.
I agree, because every time I jump in there, I'm just like, I get smoked.
Yeah, I jump in, I'm like, okay, maybe this time it'll be so much fun. It'll be a lot of fun, because it was fun for a long time. I loved it back in high school.
Oh, yeah.
But I go back to it now, and then I play for 5-10 minutes, and I go, F this.
Wow, I feel the same way about eating at McDonald's.
Every time you go back, you hope it's going to be better.
Maybe it changed hands. Maybe it's all new now. Never is.
I get around that by I haven't eaten by the fact that I haven't eaten at McDonald's in like 15 years. So
because you're such a health nut, Dan.
Oh no, it's got nothing to do with health. It's the fact that they have had some of the most annoying commercials I've ever seen, and their food is crap. So I don't see the value in I just can't imagine. I can't deal with the fact that like a fraction of a cent of my money might go to putting more of those annoying commercials on the air.
Oh, I know another game that would probably be good is Portal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, just going back and, you know, either replaying it or trying all the new challenges.
Yeah, definitely.
I need to play those new hard maps, the ones that Bethesda made and stuff.
I was just playing one of those yesterday. I was playing the second one. And it is, I like the first two parts of it, I got. The third part has me stumped. It's the energy ball portion. I'm still working on how to get it into there's a little closed room that I can't figure out how to get into.
You know, the thing with Portal is the energy ball stuff is actually the stuff I like the least. The stuff I like the most is the stuff that requires like fast reflexes. And so you're like in midair changing.
Oh, right.
There's some of that too in the Bethesda map.
I feel like some of my solving some of the energy ball stuff was really just kind of like luck. Like I completely understood what needed to be done. You know, like I understood conceptually where the portals needed to be, but sort of getting them in exactly the right place was a little bit of dumb luck.
Right. Norm, did you ever try the time trials?
Yes, and I could never do them very well. Oh, although there are some good tutorials online on YouTube.
Yeah.
There's that's like the anti way I like to play that game.
There's time a couple energy ball ones where you have to time it perfectly and your reaction has to be perfect. So the energy ball like ends up without wasting any time. Like that's pretty fun, I think. But
you and I have different definitions of fun, my friend. Let's see one more question.
Let's wild card this one.
Hi, this is Jeff from Fort Wayne. And I'm wondering if there is a method of game protection out there that actually does work. And there's a lot of talk about games being pirated on the first day and everything, and it just seems like there's got to be a technology out there that is not intrusive that would actually work to protect the games. Thanks.
Well, if there was, somebody would be using it.
Yeah.
Everybody would.
Magic. Every game comes with its own bodyguard. Yeah.
Yeah. we did a reviews intro a long time about that. Lou would come with each and every game. He would break your fingers if you tried to pirate him.
Yeah, and if there were such a technology, a lot of people, like everybody, would be using it. But the fact is that like anything is pretty much crackable, and there are groups of people out there that just seem to enjoy maybe they don't even play the games, but they just enjoy the challenge of cracking it.
They suck.
That's their own game.
Right, so it's just they compete with each other, and it's a challenge for them, and there are some talented people out there, so they've been able to get through just about any copy protection that's ever been conceived, and you know the advantage of that consoles have in anti-piracy is that their platforms are closed, so they can hardwire the computer in the console to not to have some copy protection in there. So in order to break that, you actually have to open the console and modify the hardware, whereas PCs can't do that because the platform is open.
But even with consoles, I mean, like, I remember one Nintendo developer was trying to claim that like 90% of DS owners are actually pirating their games. Of course, they came back later and they said, well, okay, maybe not 90%. Like all these grandmothers and
yeah, I was just gonna say people. my mom is totally pirating her DS. Yeah, her DS.
Yeah, exactly.
At like 0.09%.
Right, but you know, I mean, there is still a way to do it even with the consoles.
It just burns, like, really pisses me off. Really, like if you're that talented at something like that, you know, instead of like screwing things up for the rest of us, like, I don't know. Go do something productive. Go learn how to disarm explosives or something.
Well, I mean, some of them even claim that, you know, they're doing it because they're trying to point out the holes, you know, to these people, you know, like. But I think that's probably the minority. I mean, most people are just trying to cause trouble, and then they just want to get this stuff for themselves.
Those people suck.
Jack, what have you been playing?
Let's see. Well, I am playing right now the next Sam & Max episode.
Jack.
I'm pretty much making my career now just playing Sam & Max episodes as they come out. So it's I finished up Night of the Raving Dead, and now I'm on to the new one, which I've now forgotten the name of. I have to look up.
Is it publicly available?
It's the zombie one, right?
That's Night of the Living Dead. No. The brand new one right after that, which is called Chariots of the Dogs. It's going to be it's the fourth episode of season two, and it'll be coming out on March 14th. But of course, reviewers get access early. So,
Jesus, Chuck, what are you going to do when American McGee's Grimm comes out? That's a weekly.
Oh my God!
That's a weekly game.
I don't know what I'm going to do.
Chuck's just lucky he's not a Penny Arcade fan. There's going to be an episodic game there too, so you just wouldn't have any time at all. But so, Kristen, what have you been playing?
I'm playing Democracy. Democracy.
Like watching the debates or voting the primary?
No. I mean, in fact, as a result of having, you know, being participating in real life in the political process, I'm playing this game called Democracy by who makes this? Looks like it's published by Ascaron. But anyway, it's this sort of like, it's basically a strategy game where you can play as the leader of any number of countries. Right now I'm playing as the president of the United States, and this is going to sound really geeky and horrible, but it's actually really fun, where you actually are given the opportunity to make like sort of various policy changes. So it'll show you like your popularity throughout the entire country among various voters. And then it'll show you, okay, here are like the five big issues that people are pissed about. And it'll be like pollution, you know, gridlock, trade tariffs. And then it's really easy. It's just with a slider. You sort of make decisions on how you're going to change the policy, and it, you know, affects everything all the way across the board. So
now, is this Democracy 2?
You know what? It's not Democracy 2, because I remember the earlier, when did that game come out? A couple years ago, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
But I didn't play it then, so I don't know if it's the exact same game or not, but it's actually a UK-made game.
But isn't it totally unrealistic to have a woman president? Sorry.
Yeah, the original Democracy, I think, came out in 2005.
This says the release date is February 2008.
Okay, so this must be Democracy 2 then.
Yeah, it doesn't say that on the thing.
From Positech Games?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But okay. It says, in any case, it's really, it's a fun sort of quirky little, you know, take 15 minutes here and there, find out you can't run the country.
Yeah, there was a game, was it Starduck that put it out? It was the like presidential campaign game for
Open. I think that was Starduck, because I remember Dan Morris playing that a lot.
Yeah, I was playing it with him. That was a fun little game. I thought they were going to put out an 08 version, but I haven't seen anything from them about it. And it was a pretty basic game, and once you figured out the mechanics, it was really easy to game the system and basically break it, and you know, auto win, but it was still, you know, fun to play around with, and you know, with all the election stuff in the media, it was you know,
nice. Was the cheat code 9/11?
Maybe not too soon,
dude.
It's good Rudy Giuliani humor, although it's too late, really. That's a problem.
Yeah, too late.
But you could put like any candidate versus any candidate from like history, which is nice. You could have Grover Cleveland versus Ronald Reagan if you wanted to. So it was
cool.
It was kind of neat.
Actually, win an election for real.
But yeah, it was goofy, little fun. Anyway. Noran, what are you playing?
Frontlines. I've been playing it, and I'm going to jump back in right after this podcast. It's awesome.
Well, there was a little issue we were having with it. Did the patch that just came out today fix that?
No. I think there was an issue with high-end systems where the foliage, if you turn it to medium or high, the game will stutter. But otherwise, it'll run fine. So turn foliage down, fix the problem for me.
But they didn't fix it in the first patch, though.
No, the first patch was more for, I think, server stuff. I think the patch was actually leaked, and then because it was leaked, they had to update it and release it for real. And like half the servers right now are still the old version, and half the servers are the new version, 1.01.
But that said, you've been enjoying your time with it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, remind me of what Frontlines is again.
Frontlines, it's like Battlefield. Created by the guys who made the Desert Combat Mad.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so that is one I'm excited about. I should check that out.
Yeah. It's out for both 360 and PC, but the PC version is far superior.
Because you can
aim? I'm also playing, what's that?
Because you can aim?
Well, among other things.
Yeah.
Yes. But what else can you do in the PC version that you can't do in the console version?
played it super high. I mean, the way the maps are designed, it's just like shooting people in far distances. It's really easy. So mostly the aiming, you know, being able to turn really quickly. Yeah, and it looks better, a lot better.
Right.
I'm also playing Audio Surf because I didn't play it last week. I played it this past weekend, and that is also trippy and awesome.
All right, Andy, what are you playing?
I've been kind of a bad gamer this week. I've only been playing Team Fortress 2 here and there.
It's not being a bad gamer. That's a good gamer.
I know.
It's a good gamer.
I feel like I should step up my game playing, though. It's like I owe it to the listeners.
Yes, I can hear them rioting outside right now, Andy.
I know. Yeah. Don't let them in.
Your assignment for next week is to play.
And I feel like you guys should be giving me homework assignments and stuff.
Well, we can work on that. But, yeah, do it for all the kids out there, Andy.
Exactly.
Think of the children.
The people.
You're
the people,
playing
they
for
need
them.
To.
But what's your favorite class in TF2?
You know, it was Sniper, but I always just get yelled at by everybody on the server. They're like, don't be Sniper noob, like be something useful. And I'm like, oh, God. But I suck at everything else. And so I've been trying to get really good at Demo Man, I guess.
Yes, that's a really good class.
Yeah, and I'm actually having a lot of fun. So, yeah.
I'm bad at Demo Man. For some reason, I can never time the explosives right, the sticky bombs. But I tend to
end up blowing yourself up.
I do a little bit of that. Yeah, I was actually surprised at how well I was playing as Pyro recently. I guess I hadn't played as Pyro for a long time, and they did buff up the Pyro a little bit a few months ago, didn't they?
Oh, they must have, because it's so hacked right now.
Yeah. If I can kill people as Pyro, then it must be. So. All right, well, that's going to have to do it for us today, I think. We've got to get back to the magazine-making game. If you want to subscribe to the magazine, please go to pcgamer.com/subscribe. If you want to send us a question for us to play on the air and respond to, you can record it on an MP3 and send that to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Andy, what's the number if they want to call in?
So if you want to send in a voicemail, yeah, you can call a toll-free number. It is 1-877-404-1337, extension 724, which is PCG, I believe.
Yep. And yeah, keep that message to a minute, because otherwise it'll cut you off.
Yes.
Oh, and real quick, I am still reading everyone's Peggle entries. It's just taking a long time, but I haven't forgotten about you all, and we'll have an update very soon.
Yeah. He's just one man. All right. We'll see all of you next week.
Bye-bye.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 122 for February 28th, 2007. Oh, hell.
Oh, hell.
I said 2007.
We're in the past.
I'm still writing 2007 on my podcast.
Okay. It's Dan's favorite story
It's not my favorite story, but this is a highly amusing story.
Before you start this, Dan, okay, so Andy... I want you to come up with a theme song or something for this next segment, because it's going to be a recurring theme. Okay, go Dan.
No,
yes.
It's not a recurring theme. It's not a recurring theme because we avoid talking about this. We avoid talking about Jack Thompson.
It's a Jack
Thompson. He's wacky.
In it.
He's a lawyer.
He's Jack Thompson.
It's a 1-877. Wait, 1-877-1337, extension 724.
Yeah, there were some numbers missing there. Do that again.
Wait, hold on. I need to look up
that.
I don't know. The emails just come in. I don't have to check anything. Oh, here we go. Okay.
Awesome. I won my eBay item. Awesome.
What'd you win?
Thanks to everybody.
Yeah, what did you win?
A jacket.
What kind of jacket?
Is it
nice
is it
one
pink to match your your?
No, it's not pink.
Is it a winter jacket?
Is it a members only jacket?
I wish. That's why I tuned out that question. I was sniping.
Wait, how'd you win something?
Oh, you sniped? You're bad. You're bad, man.
Well, no, I was waiting for the last second and entered my bid and won it.
Is it like an outerwear jacket or like a sport coat?
An outerwear jacket.
Like a ski jacket or what? I mean,
what you're saying, Norm, is
I want details.
It's just a jacket.
Tell us more.
So, Norm, at the last second, you raised the bounty and set the pirates after something.
Oh, dude. I was just going to say.
Yeah. Lead. Yeah. Playing Sins of the Solar Empire helped my eBay sniping.
Seriously,
skills.
Don't you hate it when you get sniped by the CPU at the last second and bounty ends up on you and you're like, what?
These are excellent outtakes.